If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Your coffee would never get cold. Your flight would always be on time. And your mattress would always respond to you and your unique sleep needs. Sleep Number mattresses are designed to respond to your body and shift with your changing life, helping you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschutz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee and co-host of the program, Bruce Miller, a longtime entertainment reporter. And we're kind of getting back here. We've got some new shows coming out, some movies.
Well, I'm
exciting
still
time
in the
theater. Summer.
I'm still in the theater watching The Odyssey.
You're still there. You're on your 19th hour. It's an odyssey, they say.
You know, what's funny is that when you're there that long, the people sitting next to you start visiting with you. They figure out, what the heck, we're all in it for the same thing. Hey, well, how are you doing over there? How's that popcorn? You know, that was interesting. It created friends while I was there. But it's long, and we had no air in the theater.
Now, did you see it on a normal screen or an IMAX screen?
Normal. We did not have an IMAX.
Oh, bummer. Now, so was the film square on your rectangular screen, or did they chop it to make it
long.
Like 16 by 9?
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah. Okay. What was your overall thought of the movie?
No, I made it through, although I did go to the bathroom once. That was a given. But I was surprised how it kept me interested. I was also shocked that all those big stars that are in it don't really have that much of a part.
Right.
If we're looking for a best supporting actor or supporting actress, I don't know who it is.
They'll find somebody, because that's how, you know, it's like Alec Baldwin and Glenn Ross. What do you have, like 3 minutes of screen time in that movie? You know, so you can nitpick, you can find somebody, but it feels like, if you remember, I mean, even going back years, like sometimes when you get these big movies and they have the big ensemble casts, it's just fun to drop somebody in there. You know, it's like, I remember Saving Private Ryan, and, you know, there was a film that had just like, you get a tidbit of an actor who's like, oh, I know that person. And, you know, they show up and get shot, and it was it.
Oscar.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Mike Myers showed up in Inglourious Bastards, the Tarantino movie.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. It'll be strong all summer long, but because it was on so many screens, I did not have a problem getting in.
Right.
It was good. And they had a Trojan horse for your popcorn bucket.
Ooh. Did you get it?
No. I have too much crap as it is. I can't get that as well.
So if it was a proper Trojan horse, though, would there be popcorn on the inside, and then you open up the bottom and M&Ms secretly pop out?
It was just popcorn.
Ah, oh, missed opportunity. They should have put me in charge of that one.
You need to be advising them on those things, because you have the expertise.
Exactly. But there's a secretive compartment. We got to get it in.
And if we're going with classics, 80s Town is now coming to theaters. It's one of those live shots where they shoot the cast on stage. And if you're into that whole thing, you want to have a little more, you know, mythological world in your life, go for that.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept to me, filming the broadcast, the original cast. And I know they did it with Hamilton, and then they ended up airing it on Disney+. I guess, you know, it's to me, it's kind of strange, because when I want to watch a Broadway show, I like to go to the theater. I don't want to necessarily watch it on TV, but or in a theater, but I can see the appeal. You know, if you couldn't get to New York City to see the actors, this is your opportunity to see the original cast.
So that then you could look, you know, 20 years down the road and say, what was that show like? Was it really that good? And they can see the whole thing. I'll even watch ones on YouTube that somebody just kind of bootlegged, and held up a phone and shot it. They cut the heads off everybody. And, you know, sometimes it runs away at some point. I just saw Hello Dolly that way. The Bette Midler Hello Dolly.
Oh, really?
And I go, well, okay, I get a chance to see how it holds up. Or was it really worth all that when it was in the theater? But I wish they would do it for all of the shows. They can have a moratorium on how long it takes to get it in theaters. And, you know, then we get a chance to see these things that maybe you either aren't there when they're shooting, or you can't get in, or the tickets are too high.
Right.
But I like the concept. So that's interesting. I've been watching new shows too.
Yes.
There's a thing called The Shards. Have you heard of The Shards?
I don't think so.
It's set in the 80s, and It has a lot of kids of. So Richard Gere's son, Cindy Crawford's daughter, all of them are playing people in the 80s in a story written by Bret Easton Ellis. You remember him from American Psycho and Less Than Zero and all this? And it's supposed to show you what it was like back in the 80s. Now, I was back in the 80s, so I know what it was like. And I don't know that they actually capture all of the nuances of the decade as well as they could. But there's a serial killer. There's a lot of strange things going on. Cults, you name it.
Okay.
And that.
Oh, this is. Yeah, this is that Ryan Murphy one, right?
You know what Ryan Murphy does with all those things.
I didn't recognize the name at first, but then when I looked it up quick, I realized that this was kind of on my future watch list. Sure.
Yeah, and I've watched, this is not a review, so don't think I'm reviewing it. But I've watched about 5 episodes of the thing.
Okay.
And all I find myself doing is looking to see, are the clothes right? Are the, you know, what are the brands like they've got that are being bandied about? And, you know, is it what I remember it to be? I don't know. But so that's new and that's coming. But it's just been a whirlwind. I also talked to the people behind The Devil Wears Prada, and there is going to be a Devil Wears Prada 3, but it's not going to take 20 years to get it out on the in the thing. They're talking about it now, so I think it would be within the next 5 years we'll see something.
Okay. Interesting. With the regular cast, or are they shifting it somewhere?
Oh, yeah. It has to be all in or none. And they were real worried that they wouldn't get everybody. And then they remember back when the first one was filmed, and Meryl Streep was very nice to everybody when they did the table read, when they looked at the script. And she turned to Anne Hathaway and she said, "You're a great actress. I love what you do, but I'm not going to be nice to you now for the next few weeks." So she wanted to just get in character, and then she was cold like Miranda was.
Okay.
And then when they did the second one, the sequel, she said, that's gone. We're not doing that. That's not it. And she laughed with them every day, and they all were sitting together and having fun. But yeah, it hit streaming this week. So if you haven't seen it yet, do see it. I think it still holds up even, you know, 6 months later.
Interesting.
I think it could be a best screenplay nominee.
Fascinating.
Because we don't see those kind of rom-commy pictures get in there, and I think it could have a shot.
Interesting. Well, and there's enough popularity to that now the franchise. I think sometimes you get that momentum behind you also, right? Right.
But so there's one. But yeah, they're talking about it, and they said they were all excited about how it turned out, and you know, it was a whim that reality reached what they were looking for a storyline, with media kind of collapsing and fashion collapsing and all of this kind of imploding on them. And then they had a good way of taking it somewhere. So
interesting.
Yeah. And then I got to talk to Stephen Root. Stephen Root, you've seen him he was Milton, I believe, in Office Space. Yes. And if you look at his resume, he has like 5 or 6 things each year. Yeah. Each year, this guy works. And he said, I realize that when I was watching, and you'll hear this because I do have the interview, but when he was watching old movies, he wouldn't necessarily watch them for Jimmy Stewart. He'd watch them for the character actors in the background because he said, those people really draw your attention. And that's why he likes being a character actor, because, you know, you get that repeat viewing because people want to see that goofy character you can play. He talks about working with the Coen brothers too. And he's a real, I said, you're almost like John Ratzenberger from all the Pixar films where they've got to have you in their film or else it's not a real deal. And he said he was just lucky. And he had done something at the interview. And what he did, he crossed his eyes. He took his glasses off and put the one eye like that. And there you go. They said, oh, that was a choice, you know. They hired him, and here he is. So if you like, here's an interview with Stephen Root, who's nominated for an Emmy for Widow's Bay for a guest, I think it's a guest actor, in the comedy division, which I don't think Widow's Bay is that at all. I don't think it's a comedy. So here's Stephen Root.
But I was sure that the show would be recognized because in all aspects of it, it's just been astonishing, the writing, the casting of everybody on this show, and the fact that everybody wanted to do it, and it was wonderful.
And there are other seasons, right? It's not just a one and done.
Yes, sir. We have been officially picked up. We're hoping to work maybe a little earlier than we did last year so we can get it out there, but we're on the road to two.
Okay, so how do you get everything done? Because in a year's time, you have more damn work than anybody. I swear you're always busy.
You know what? I kind of maybe did a little too much last year, so I'm taking a little break this year and doing more publicity and press than anything else. But it's a joy to be able to do well-written stuff, and that's really my... What I do these days, if I consider doing something, it has to be really well written, and I think every episode of Widows certainly was.
Sure. Okay. Well, so then going back to King of the Hill.
Yes.
How tough was that to get back into that groove? Was it very easy to find the voice, even, or
not even a thought? Because Bill always has lived with me. He lived with me for 13 years, doing it every week. And even though we took this little 10-year hiatus, he has always been there. He'll always be there. And I think you'll find with a lot of character actors, they have some guys in their pocket that they can always bring out.
Did you listen to old episodes then to find the voice? Or how did you, you know, how do you get there? Is it...
It's not different, really, than doing any character actor that you're doing live on camera, because the action doesn't stop at my neck. My whole body becomes Bill, as you know, even though you don't see it, you hear the voice. It's pretty much the same, because you have to become that character, not just the voice of that character.
How different, though, is it now that you're not on a network? You're on a streaming service, because I know there's some swearing in there, and there are other. Do you feel that difference or not?
I do feel the difference, and what's good about it is that you can be a little freer in how people really act and how different the world is 10 years after we stopped doing the classic show. I mean, I could never have thought about Peggy screaming at Hank on a golf course. But in the case of these characters who are evolving and have grown older and wiser, I think that's perfectly in tune with it.
Well, I found that I was relating to them more. Does that say
Absolutely.
Something about me?
You
know,
yes.
I thought,
yes.
Somebody is parking out in front of my house. What is this? Why are they doing that? You know? Those kinds of things, and I thought,
why is Khan trying to steal my home, and he's not? he's actually helping him to become a better human.
And I had somebody call and try and scam me on the phone too. So I said, this is my life. I have now become King of the Hill. You know what I mean? It's bizarre. Well, then, so
I did one of those. Yeah, I certainly suckered into one of those scams and was going down to buy gift cards for, you know, some ridiculous scam. And I called my business manager and said, this isn't right, is it? And he said, no, what are you doing? Are you insane? But that's what happens in the real world right now. There's a lot of it going on. And King of the Hill is reflecting a lot more real life than it ever has.
How are you together, all of you? Or is it just you go in and you do your part and that's it?
We so wish we were. The first five or six seasons, we were all able to do it in a kind of a semicircle, like an old radio show.
Right.
And you could see Peggy there and I could see Dale over there and you could react because acting is reacting. You could, you know, get a little more oomph out of the performance because of that. But now and after COVID, it's pretty much recording by yourself. But do I still have the sense, quote, sense memory of that, of us all being together? I do. And it's never going to go away.
Do you call up the other people and say, now, how'd you do this? Or, you know, I'd be curious because that's such a group. You know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah. Well, we've never been out of touch. We always have been in touch. And they're all dear friends. And we do get to see each other every once in a while. But everybody has kind of physically moved out of Los Angeles. Some come to New York. Some go somewhere else. So it doesn't matter. We still connect with each other. In fact, I'm seeing Pamela Adlon tomorrow. No, the next day, which is her birthday here. Aww. in New York. So I got to see her. But we always try to stay in touch very closely because we love each other very much.
Well, you do so many voices for so many shows. How do you make sure they're all different? How do you say this is the voice I'm using for this or?
A lot of it has to do with which register you're in, if you're at a lower one or in a higher one. And that helps to distinguish a lot of things for me is where do I want to go with this guy? Is he not sure of himself? That would maybe be a higher register than somebody who's completely sure of himself, who is, and so you go low. But that helps me. But mostly my just character actor roots, as I said before, I mean, you become the character and it's not just a voice happening.
Was there a point in your career where you said, oh, I'm not getting work, but when I get older, I will really get a lot of work?
Never did I think that. I thought it would gradually wind down into not much. And it's only since I've gotten into my 60s and 70s now, I've only gotten more work. So that was the exact opposite what I thought would happen. But I think it helps to become a more mature human being and you can do more with your art by having more life experience.
Sure. So
that's what's happening.
Well, the character roles are always the best ones.
There, I think so.
Always.
I never want it to be anything else but that. Because it's, you can come in and not steal the show, but you can make it better, you know, and that's what I think all the character actors in the 30s, 40s, 50s did with all these great movies. Because when you watch them again, you're watching the character actors that you love.
Right, right.
And you come back for them, not necessarily Jimmy Stewart or whatever, you know.
How did you get to be such a favorite of the Coen brothers? Was there something that they saw that they said, oh, we've got to have this guy. He's got to be our John Ratzenberger and we've got to have him in everything.
I think I was lucky. I think I scared them. The first real audition I had with them was for Oh Brother. And I knew this. As a character actor, I knew these Southern guys, because I have a lot of Southern friends, did a lot of theater that was Southern. So I came in, I knew what I wanted to do with the guy, and sat down on the table, very, you know, 3 feet from them. And they said, do you know what you want to do? And I said, yeah. And they said, okay, go ahead. And I went like this. And I think I just scared them. I think I just scared them into giving me the role. And they liked what I did.
Hey, Dennis. Well, thank you so much.
Because they wanted me to do it again and again. So I love those guys. It's been an honor to work in as many films with them as I did.
Keep it going. We've got more to do, but we've got more King of the Hill we want and Widow's Vase. Yes, so don't let me go. And I'll be cheering for you at the Emmys. So thanks so much.
Oh, Bruce, so great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you for that interview. You know, Steven Root, one of his better roles in recent years was Fuchs or the Raven in Barry, if you remember. And that was one of the, I don't know, almost few roles where he's a little bit less of a character actor and he had an opportunity to be more of a starring role or co-starring role. And he was tremendous in that. That was such a fun show. It kind of had an odd ending. That last season was weird, but he's a really good actor. And I mean, you know, just like, you know, you remember him of iconic roles like The Office, of course, but you go through his just list and it's a phone book.
It's, I mean, the dude,
yeah. I mean, you know, you wonder with the residuals and stuff, like he probably has to have a great accountant just to keep track of everything. Cause the checks probably come flying in nonstop.
Yeah. It's amazing, but hey, they like him. He gets work and now he's part of that reboot team on King of the Hill. And those people were worried that they weren't coming back either. They still have almost the whole cast, because there are some who have died since it ended. They had it was on Fox and they just said it's over. And they thought, will it ever come back? And the producer said, yeah, we'll be back. We just have to wait for the right time. And then Disney bought Fox and then bought, they had Hulu, they needed content. And so the creators decided to take it another step and update it so that the people are older now and it's more fitting and it's more, you know. But the bad thing is of course, they can't all sit together like they used to and do it like a radio show. They're all just. So that's how Steven Root can do all these things. He's the voice of a lot of characters. And then he, sits at home. You can do it on a cell phone. And he could do all of his part there, but not knowing how other people are going to react to you. That would be an interesting concept. And I got to talk to the other actors that are involved with this. And they say they're so glad it's back. They've already filmed two seasons and they're booked for a couple more. So that'll still be going on Hulu. You'll find King of the Hill on Hulu and then Widow's Bay on Apple TV.
Interesting. I always I don't know if I've ever mentioned this to you, but my father-in-law, who sadly passed away earlier this year, I always thought of him as a little bit of a Hank Hill, because he dealt in propane and propane products. So for most of his career he worked, he did a lot of different things over his life, like HVAC work but for a very long time, he worked for a co-op in Door County, Wisconsin, and they did he was like largely in charge of propane and hookups and installation. And, you know, you get to a lot of these farming communities in rural areas and the main fuel you use is liquid propane, because you can't tap into a main gas line out in out in the country, right? So you need to have propane brought into you. So it was nice when we lived up in that way. When I got married to my wife, we were in the Green Bay area for quite a few years. So I would just send him empty canisters of propane for my gas grill, and they would come back and I'd be paying cost. And like, you know, now to get a propane tank filled is somewhere in the $20 range. It's gone up quite a bit. There were times I would give him like $3 in cash and it would come back with a full tank of propane.
Wow. Yeah. See, it pays to have friends in the right places.
It does. It does. Yeah. So I always, anytime I, any reference to King of the Hill, I start thinking of, of my father-in-law there. So he was a good person, and sadly we lost him earlier.
I hope he got his jacket and his hat.
Those are it was proudly on display along with he had I don't know what you would call it. It's almost like a Bible of sorts for Candyman, right? Where you open up, it's like a little black book, and you open it up and it has how to fix like anything you could think of mechanical, you know, from a washer to a dryer to a furnace, and that and his hat and a few other things were on display when we had a celebration of life.
That book is a YouTube.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's it. I mean, you know, nowadays you just Google it, right? You just watch a YouTube video and you kind of figure it out. But, you know, for him, that's, you had that little black book.
Golden. It was golden. Well, that's yeah,
right.
I like it now that it's upgraded because I relate so much to the characters. I am Hank Hill now myself.
You are Hank Hill. Yeah. And I mean, with this show, I'll have to check it out. King of the Hill, I watched it pretty much from its inception. I don't know when I stopped. I mean, the problem with some of these animated series is they just hit a point where you're redoing the same things over and over and over again. It's like The Simpsons lost me somewhere around season 30, just because, like, it's so formulaic now. You've got your Treehouse of Horrors, you have the Christmas episode, you have some episode where, some episode like Homer Met Marge, where, you know, at one point it was Woodstock, and then at some other point it was, you know, like Y2K. I don't know. It's just, they age them up, but they never age.
How difficult that must be for them to come up with ideas. No, we did that in 92. That one we've done. So, and somebody has to keep track of it.
You would think. Yeah, I know. But I worked with somebody for whose brother has been working. He's an Emmy winner for The Simpsons, been on the series for many, many years, and you know, made a career out of it. But it's one of those things where it just, like, you know, King of the Hill and Family Guy and The Simpsons, you know, South Park. These are all shows that I loved watching when they came out, and for many, many years. But it just hits a point where it's like, kind of. I'm good.
I've been to table reads for King of the Hill and for Simpsons.
Okay.
And it is kind of, because they get everybody together.
Right.
It is kind of a, let's try to outdo somebody. And let's get the laugh. Who got the biggest laugh? You can see where there is a competition. Whereas if you're alone, should I do it louder? Should I do it?
Right.
You know, what? Right. How do you know to compete or up the game? But it is fun to watch, and it is, and I, you know, I can turn one on and go, have I seen this one? And then I'll sit down and maybe see two or three more. And then before you know it, your day is shot.
That's right. Well, I think my day is shot. So on that note, thank you for listening. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.